son varios, son súper.
Sí, necesito porque no lo hemos usado.
Sí, yo tampoco.
Para
plantear a los mesieros.
No, no, no.
¿Listos?
Pero está
bueno. Bueno, entonces vamos a empezar.
This is Rodrigo de la Parra speaking. Okay, let's start. We can see the agenda on the screen. Well, at least we used to have it there. Now we will have it on the screen again. But let me tell you that we will divide this session into three sessions. We're going to start with a panel regarding free trade agreements and internet led by Celia. After that, we will have a session regarding the updates of the regional IGF. Bernadette Luis is here from the ICTU and Fatima Cambronero from the regional IGF forum. And then we will speak about the activities of the strategic plan. And now, without further ado, I will give the floor to Wanda Scartesini. This is Wanda Scartesini. Thank you for being here.
Attend this meeting. We have no much time and a full agenda. So I would like to pass the word to Celia to introduce our invitee. And after that, I will pass the word to Rodrigo, porque vamos a tener una agenda muy...
Because we will have a very busy agenda, I personally won't be able to stay here because I belong to the NOMCOM and our session has already started and it's not in this hotel, so I have to leave the hotel once I have finished talking, once Celia finishes with her presentation, because I am really interested in her presentation. Go ahead, Celia. This is Celia Lerman. Thank you very much. Welcome to the LAC space. This is something that arises from the LAC strategy. This is a space for stakeholders all around, but especially business-driven stakeholders. And under this large umbrella, this is a topic, an interesting topic for free trade agreements and how they impact on internet governance. I would like to thank the committee, Gaby Slag, Wanda, and Rodrigo for all their efforts and our panelists as well. We have Andres Guadamu from the SUSEC University. He belongs to Costa Rica. He comes from Costa Rica, and he's an expert on these treaties, especially related to Central America. And we have Margarita Valdez. She will tell us about the Chilean experience. And in ICANN, I represent the Institute. I am wearing my hat that is a teacher to the Ditela University. Now we will upload the presentation. Celia speaking. Welcome, everyone, once again.
Bueno, muy bien. Cuestiones técnicas ahora en un minutito.
Celia speaking. Okay, we will start shortly. We have some technical issues to solve first.
Bueno, si les parece, tomamos asiento.
Celia speaking. Please take your seats so that we can start shortly. We have a very busy agenda. Okay, let's begin. This is Celia speaking. As I told you before, today we will speak about free trade agreements and their impact on internet policies in Latin America. This is a study being carried out by University Torquato Di Tella University together with Pennsylvania University, and I am leading this, and Martin is also helping me. For this, we will have three panelists today with us. I have already introduced them. So next slide, please. Next slide. Okay. We have Andres. As I told you, he comes from SUSEC University. He's an expert on intellectual property and a member of Pretty Common, and he has studied free trade agreements in Central America. Then we have Margarita Valdez from NIT Chile telling us about the Chilean experiences. We will have other members. The idea is to have a fluid discussions, and the participation of CCs is very important here. I don't know if you can see the screen properly, but what is the most interesting thing about these treaties? By entering into FTAs, bilateral and unilateral FTAs, there have been regulations regarding internet policies under the framework of FTAs. Chile was a pioneer with its treaty with the U.S., and this was being replicated at a bilateral as well as regional level in Central America. Perhaps you cannot see that on the screen, but we have different clauses. Certain clauses affect directly domain names. What do they say? Well, they affect the dispute resolution. They also affect what we know as WHOIS, what is the database, or that is the database that the CC should have. This is at the CC level. Then we have the treaties related to the responsibilities of intermediaries in terms of copyright and intellectual property, replicating the U.S. model. These treaties also contain clauses related to e-commerce. They recognize the importance of e-commerce. You also have clauses related to that data protection and telecommunication. And then they have these positions, but also they have some disclaimers related to privacy issues. They say that they will have flexibility when applying the treaties and some other internal legislation issues. As I said before, these treaties began in Chile, but nowadays there are more than 11 countries with this type of treaties: Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Mexico, Nicaragua, Peru, Panama, and Dominican Republic. And Mexico is now participating in this because it is participating in negotiations of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Treaty. This is a treaty, a multilateral trade agreement. This is not a regional agreement. And this is a controversial agreement because it is a secret agreement. Chile and Peru are also participating. It is interesting because for Chile and Peru, well, they have experience in this subject matter. For Mexico, this is not so, and they need to exchange information. They need to adapt to the new situation. Next slide, please. There we have dispute resolution clauses. What do they say? This is a model clause. This was being replicated. And the International Trademark Association provides recommendations for this clause. Each party shall require the management of its country code level domain, CCTL, provide an appropriate procedure for the settlement of disputes based on the principles established in the UDRP in order to address the problems of trademark cyber piracy. This is interested. Then Margarita will let us know about her experience. But in many cases, this was implemented at a local level, and this was implemented at a governmental level, but at the local level, there was not a dispute resolution system implemented. So this was a positive and a negative thing. It was positive because it was a possibility to start debating about this, but the negative thing was that they were in a rush doing that. We know that sometimes in Latin America, we do things in a rush, and there were certain cases in which the UDRP was adopted just as it was. We had some conversations with the CC, and a very interesting case was the Costa Rica case. In their case, in order to comply with the treatment, they had to adopt the UDRP as it is. They didn't have the chance of having internal debates. They sent their disputes to Geneva, the Intellectual Property Organization, the WIPO, and they had their collaboration, but at the local level, they had no disputes because the parties were not familiarized what the meaning of a dispute or what a dispute was. And with a .ca for them, it's very difficult to send something to Geneva because they interact with Geneva. So this is quite far away from the local culture. So in 2012, the renegotiations in terms of internet governance commenced. They created the consulting internet governance body, and they created a framework to implement a UDRP provider at the local level. And today at the WIPO, there is this local provider for dispute resolutions in the Bars Association at the local level. This is a very interesting case in terms of implementation of this treaty. Please, could you please slow down for the sake of the interpreter? Thank you. Celia speaking. Another case, interesting case. And there I see Nito Ibarra. He also agreed to participate with us. The other case was the case of El Salvador, where they say that they're going to implement that at a local level by means of a dispute resolution provider at a local level. But they haven't had disputes already, and this implementation should be further developed. Because what happens with disputes in Latin America under these treaties? This was something useful for local legislation, but was this useful, in fact, or was something that was imposed externally? Let me tell you about legislation regarding this treaty, this Trans-Pacific Partnership Treaty. This is the next treaty to be negotiated where Peru, Chile, and Mexico are involved. They propose not to adopt the UDRP as it is because this is for generic disputes. This is conceived at the WIPO sphere. This should be adapted to the local level. For example, taking into account geographical references and trade names, UDRP could be implemented or other fast system and fast and low-cost system, which should be a fair system, fair and equitable, not overly burdensome, and a system that does not preclude resort to court litigation. This is something that we usually do in Latin America. This is the part of the Latin American culture. So these type of clauses would give or would provide more flexibility. Another option being discussed in the regional Latin America strategy is what happens if there is a local supplier or provider. Well, perhaps that local provider could help at a local level in a better way than having an external provider. When it comes to the HUIS issues, well, these in these treaties, it is said that there should be an online access to an accurate and reliable database, and that the relationship with data, personal data laws and privacy laws should be taken into account. Some laws say that personal data laws should be taken into account. For example, treaties in Chile, they state that these laws should be taken into account. Some others state that they may be taken into account. For example, these Central American treaties or treaties in the U.S. And some other treaties do not mention the local law. The fact of adopting a WHOIS system through FTAs is the flexibility that is required at a local level. When a country commit itself to complying with this text at a local, at a global level, the WHOIS system may be changing. And we have countries in our region that were committed to complying with certain treaties, and this might become a problem for them. So a certain flexibility should be given in the implementation in order to comply with or follow standard global standards to help the country. There is another clause related to domain names. This is a new clause in the TPP. This is the Trans-Pacific Treaty. This is a secret treaty, but this was there was a WikiLeaks version, and that's why we can discuss it now. Therefore, this is not an official discussion, as we would say. And the third clause that we will you are discussing in the last version of 2013 is that there should be effective remedies against the trafficking of domain names. This is the traditional remedy, but what other remedies can we find? Okay, we can have injunctions, we can have fines. I mean, this requires deeper discussion or further discussion, and we have multi-stakeholder channels to discuss that. So I think it would be adequate to have such a debate. Next, please. And then we have clauses, as I said before, related to the ISP's responsibility. I don't want to get into details with this, but for example, in Chile, there was an interesting implementation because at a local level, there was a debate at the Senate, and finally, the act was implemented, taking into account the local provisions. They said, we're not going to implement this as it is stated in the U.S., but we're going to take into account a legal measure before or a previous legal remedy. In Colombia, they have the similar situation, but they were not able to implement that at a local level because what we call the Lleras Law Act did not have the necessary consensus for the implementation of the treaty. And this is being debated, and they're now changing their administration, so they will have to define when this will be implemented and under which terms. Next slide, please. One of the questions I wanted to debate with you and all the panelists is how are our free trade agreements adequate to regulate these questions? Well, some people say they're an opportunity to implement legislation to protect commerce and to protect other rights at the local level. But on the other hand, if we have multi-stakeholder channels, can't we use them in this debate for the implementation? So this is interesting to take into account. And we should also take into account the experience of other countries to implement this. And we should also take into account the discussion of other treatments, such as the TPP or the TISA, which has to do with service agreements or service issues. Conclusions. In order to trigger discussion, We need to take into account the importance of the local culture to implement these treaties. And we need to take into account that they should be flexible to reflect our Latin American culture and to adapt our culture to the legal culture and to fulfill the needs of the domain names and the intellectual properties. And transparency and openness is crucial in a model which is multi-stakeholder. And then this exchange of experiences is very useful for us to educate at a local level. Who do we educate? Well, we need to educate diplomats because they are not always aware of these internet issues. We have a long way to go in terms of education and sharing experiences and to educate people in terms of what is at stake and the importance of defending what we do. So that's all. Thank you very much. And now I will give the floor to Andres.
Ahí vamos.
That's left.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There you go.
Andres Gudamus speaking. Thank you, Celia, for this invitation and to the committee. It is a real honor for me to be here with you. This is my second ICANN meeting. My first one was in Costa Rica, and it was quite interesting because I'd never been there, at least. So it was a thrilling experience for me to be here back in London. I was born in Costa Rica, so I know what Costa Rica is like. Whenever I'm about to make a presentation, I do so with an apology. I think, if I'm not wrong, this started in 2006 when I realized that it was useful to apologize. And being from Costa Rica, I think we from Costa Rica apologize all the time. The first apology I have to make is that tomorrow we will win over England. And if there is any Uruguayan here, the same thing applies. Now, my next apology is the following. This study is a little bit old. This is a study we had undertaken together with the Script Center, a center for studies on intellectual property, with my colleagues Joby Brown and Horden Hatcher. We had this idea to carry out a study because there was virtually no one speaking about or discussing free trade agreements and their impact on Central American countries and the like. And it was interesting to see that everybody was talking about free trade agreement with Chile, the FTA with Jordan, with Australia, and afterwards other countries. Then there came APTA and other agreements. And this free trade agreement with Central America and similar countries had never been studied. So this apology is because this is a little bit old and it needs some updating. However, it is useful for the purposes of making a very quick background tour in order to trigger debate in this group. This FTA was negotiated between United States and Central American countries initially, and it was executed afterwards also with the Dominican Republic. It was initially signed in 2004 by those countries I mentioned, as I said, Central American countries first. Afterwards, in the same year, joined by the Dominican Republic. It was ratified by all states. And something to note is that the FTA per se was intended, and I guess this is the political reality underlying these FTAs, is to go beyond the content of international trade agreements entered into by organizations, mainly the World Trade Organization. So the main criticism against these treaties, is these agreements, is that they seek to grant, let's say, some people would say more power or more authority to the signatories. Certainly, this is a political connotation. The opposition expressed in some of these countries against the signing of the agreement, mainly to the signing in Costa Rica, which is what I know about, it was quite extensive. There was even a vote cast under a plebiscite. I don't really remember, but it was close to 50%. It was, I think, 49%, because there was a large number of people who were completely against the signing of this agreement. And typically, all these agreements have the same structure. They refer to labor issues, trade issues, telecommunications, e-commerce, rights, and the same thing with CAFTA. It is known as DR CAFTA or CAFTA DR. This agreement includes chapters. And one of the chapters refers to dispute resolution. We are mainly focused on ICTs. That was telecommunications, e-commerce, and intellectual property. Selina has already outlined these concepts. I will skip it. With respect to domain names, there is no deep analysis of the trademark issue. We do know that domain names are not trademarks. However, we are talking about procedures, dispute resolution procedures. So there is a mention of trademarks, but no analysis of domain names specifically. However, in Section 15.4, there is, and the title is Domain Name in Internet, it states that the parties will provide appropriate procedure for the resolution of disputes and that the URDP will be adopted. URDP will be adopted. In some countries, such as Costa Rica, we didn't have a conflict resolution culture. That is why all conflicts or disputes were taken to Geneva, because there was no local mechanisms. And this is a typical expression of the main criticism of such agreements. And the criticism says that the countries are imposed a non-native mechanism. In terms of what e-commerce is about, this is more interesting. Well, it depends on what you can understand by interesting. So on e-commerce, actually, there is no change in the traditional international practice, such as the WTO, which is that all e-transfers, electronic transfers, will not be subject to taxes, will not be encumbered. So when digital products are physically sent across borders, Article 14.3.2, for instance, says that it will be applied the charges, the taxes, such as CDs. So what matters here is that there is a physical shipment. And then Section 14.3.3 grants, accords national treatment standards. So in practice, this was very similar to the traditional status quo. With respect to intermediary liability in the internet, it is evident that the United States is trying to export its legislation to Central American countries mainly, because virtually the entire section of third-party liability in the internet is taken copy from the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. It is actually transposed to national legislations. And this is something to be noted, because almost no country had strong provisions, such as the ones in the DMCA, because we knew what the WIPO Treaty on Copyright consisted of. Other topics discussed in the agreement, interesting or applicable to ICTs, is that several of the penalties, for instance, technological protection measures, digital rights management, those that existed in the United States legislation, were transferred to Central American countries, and damages, for instance, as well. Damages are now statutory, which punitive damages, which are very stringent. So there is, let's to say, an Americanization, if I can use this term, of the legal system of our countries to adjust ourselves to the highest bar of the United States, because we had to use that higher legislation. And this is not on your PDF file, so I apologize. So what has happened? You might think I am in full disagreement with the CAFTA, but actually I am not. Let me tell you that even though some of the implementations, such as this transposition of the United States legislation, very native of the United States to countries that are not familiar with such legal types, actually resulted in opening of some markets that were closed. That was the case of Costa Rica, and I was benefited from it. I've been for a couple of years there. So telecommunications sector was opened up. So I do criticize some of the ways and manners in which these legal figures were implemented, but it nevertheless resulted in some opening. Our president himself, who at some point in time was against the signing of this FTA, the first thing he did now was to ride the horse of the mission to the United States in order to bring investment. So he was in favor of the agreement. So the issue at stake here, if there is any, is that there has been an underlying political current here. Our countries, developing countries, because though I now live in the United Kingdom, I think I am a Costa Rican. I've always been. So our issue is that we do want to trade with the United States. We do want to trade with Europe. And in order to do that, we must accept the terms and conditions that they are offering to us. I'm not going to say that they are imposing to us, because nobody's imposing anything to us. We are accepting. However, sometimes we are not aware within our countries. We do not have the knowledge to be able to negotiate the legal concepts, the legal instruments included in the treaties, in the agreements, and that could go against us. I believe that in practice, international trade and the trade with the large markets is for our benefit. But we must have more knowledge, more national knowledge, in order to be in a better condition of negotiation. Some things which are sold to us as the miracle drug and which are not. And this has been quite clear in the case of ACTA and in the TPP, in the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations, which is undergoing, as Selina said. It's top secret, but we do not know much about it. What I have read so far scares me, to be frank. But as you know, it's always the case, the first initial wording might be scary. It's not so much when it gets to the final negotiation. And that was the case with ACTA. ACTA was quite scary at the beginning. And when we read the final draft, I personally was not afraid at all. I said this could be implemented, and not a single article of the European laws will change, because negotiations were such that the agreement could actually come to an end, to be polite. That's all. Thank you. Selina speaking. Thank you very much, Andres, for the Central American outlook. Now I will give the floor to Margarita. She will outline the experience in Chile. I'm Margarita Valdés. Good afternoon. I'm the legal and commercial director of NIC Chile, the registry of CL. I'm a member of CCNSO for the Caribbean region. The Chilean experience was quite interesting. It was good to see on the slides this aspect that the free trade agreements started by the United States, the first one was Chile. This helped us understand our experience. This helped me understand our experience. And the first comment I'd like to make is that there are some major background to highlight. In the area of domain names, Chile is quite developed. When the agreement was signed in 2003, .cl was a robust registry. Since 1997, it had its own dispute resolution system. And this is interesting, because in the ICANN meeting of August 1999, held in Santiago de Chile, when ICANN succeeded in adopting the UDRC rules, Chile already had its dispute resolution system. And that is significant, because when we had to face the later agreements, we enjoyed robustness from the community because of this policy this dispute resolution policy, which in our case was through an arbitration proceeding. In year 2000, we amended our dispute resolution system with including adding mediation as an amicable means of low-cost resolution. And this was important because the method we use in Chile, which is still current, provides for better conditions than those offered by the UDRP system. What does this mean? It is an arbitration system. So in .cl, the conditions, the resolution is issued by an arbitrator, and the courts acknowledge the validity of this award. And the difference is that it has the authority of any judicial decision. So unlike the UDRP, which is a system of panelists, which, though it seems to have all conditions to issue a decision, actually what they do is they resolve the dispute with a different type of ruling that can be reviewed and by a court. So though the local dispute resolution system never prevents domain name users to go to the courts to enforce their rights, this claim should be for a different reason. The cause, the grounds for litigation should be different from the original one. So for some judicial actions, we have been acknowledged by the Supreme Court that the decisions adopted by UDRP in .cl have the necessary firm nature. They are finally the res judicata aspect that cannot be removed unless there are new arguments. So when we had this agreement with the United States, it was very interesting, very positive things happened. First of all, the negotiation team understood that this was a new thing. They had never dealt with it before, and we were invited to discuss with them, to talk to them, for us to tell them what the industry was like, what Nick Chile was doing, and how we could join efforts, and thus not to lose this, what that was so good and recognized in the local internet community, which was the arbitration-based dispute resolution system. Patricio Paulette, the director of Nick Chile, who is around, met with the negotiation team, and we made them understand that under the horizontality structure with the U.S. government, we could tell them, you are .us, we are .cl, you use the UDRP. We have a successful local dispute resolution system, which is equivalent in value. So the best solution is that each contracting party in this agreement should acknowledge that there should be a dispute resolution mechanism and that the principles on which these mechanisms are based on the principles of the UDRP. That was included in the text. And we were very happy with that because somehow the machinery did not run over us. We were able to keep our system and hold the value it had within our community. So in this specific area of domain names, we are greatly satisfied. It is interesting to see that this clause, Article 17.3 of the Free Trade Agreement, U.S. and Chile, it provides that each party, I'm going to read it if you spare me an instant. In 17.3 of the U.S. and Chile FTA, it provides internet domain names. Each party will require the CCTLD manager, in this case .us and .cl, should provide adequate mechanisms for dispute resolution based on the principles of uniform dispute resolution procedure for domain names. In order to address the issue of cyber piracy of trademarks or manufacturer names. Two, the manager of each CCTLD should provide free access online to a reliable and accurate database with contact data for domain name registrants pursuant to each party's legislation on personal data protection. So the good part of our experience is, first, we could have a direct cooperation with the other party. The government was quite open in this respect. And second is that the first system, our local system, the U.S., replicated our provisions, our principles, in their treaty with Australia. So it was good to see that this system, which respects others, dispute resolution systems that the countries could have with the United States, could have an additional space. And this was replicated in additional time, in other times. And with respect to the TPP, we had a change of administration in March this year, an interesting change after this new executive is that the a group of advisors, of community advisors, the incumbents, was set up, you know, after the leaking case that was before. So this committee was set up, and in the Chile negotiation committee, there is a group of people from different fields involved mainly in intellectual property who are providing advice and assisting the government in understanding the subtleties involved in these fields. And mainly, they provide documentation. For instance, in the DMCA, what are the remedies requested of the TPP, there was this clause that was identical to the U.S. clause for the DMCA. So it was good for them to understand the source of this rule and what chances, what possibilities it opened for the TPP. So at least our experience was positive in this respect. It is true that the TPP, I think that darkness is the worst of the effects in any negotiations such as this one with so many parties. This was the case. But in the Chilean community, we are optimistic because the participation of Chile in this agreement has been as documented as possible. And we are also involved in this. Thank you very much.
Celia, okay, now we will have a Q&A session. Carlos, please go ahead. Thank you. Can you hear me? This is Carlos Aguirre. First of all, welcome to this academy. It's lovely to have this space. I feel like coming back because we are starting to learn about other discussions and these type of discussions that are really interesting and important for those working on this. I've been an economics professor for 25 years at Cordoba University, and we have been working with these topics for a long time. When I saw the question regarding whether CC agreements or free trade agreements are useful. Well, we need to analyze why the counterpart is always the U.S., who are they beneficiating, and the answer should be given by each country. First, we need to make the difference between governments and states. We need to know if they are benefiting the state or the government entering into the agreement. So there is a deeper issue here, and perhaps in these type of debates, which are brief, well, there is not enough time to discuss all the details. Yesterday, during lunch, I was having a conversation with Humberto Carrasco. He's from Chile. He's the secretary of the region, and he's in Edinburgh. He's drafting his thesis about the economic analysis of non-economic events, the relevance or how non-economic events impact on economy. So the economics law analyzes economy, and there is a relationship between the ICTs, the economy, and the law, and all these issues are very relevant, and they should and must be analyzed as you did. So I loved your presentation. Thank you very much, and I congratulate you for that. Celia speaking. Is there any other question? This is our space. This is the LAC space, and we need to work on that and share our experiences. Gonzalo, you have the floor. Raimundo, please. We will take two questions from the audience, and then a question from the remote participation, if you agree with that. Raimundo speaking. This is more than a question. It is a comment. First of all, I was able to cooperate with the government from Chile in the telecommunications sphere, not in the domain name sphere. And I also cooperated with some other Central American countries in terms of communication. And the experience on that occasion was that the American negotiators had a mandate of not ceding anything. And they didn't know even why. So if we want to negotiate, we need to speak about other topics. We need to speak about the different quotas. But we are not going. They said, oh, you can discuss about many things, but we're not going to discuss certain topics. So our suggestion, our recommendation at that time with the people in Chile and in some other countries, for example, in Salvador, we negotiated terms. And in that sense, the U.S. negotiators, well, they accessed to that. And it's a way of winning time, of having time. Now, my second comment has to do with the PPA. The new foreign minister had a new idea, and he says that there is no Pacific without the Atlantic. And this is something important to take into account, even for the U.S., because they have both coastal areas on the Atlantic and on the Pacific. And this was very well taken by Mexico. And, well, there was a trend saying that Argentina and Brazil had also to intervene in these negotiation rules. Andres Guadamusa speaking. I have an experience to tell you. The U.S. Trade Representative, this is the U.S. entity negotiating and representing the U.S. government. This is a quite a strange entity. Not long ago, I had an experience with them. I was carrying out a consulting activity with the WIPO, and according to that, the terms of the contract were written or drafted by the member states. And the United States said, firstly, that no recommendations were supposed to be made. The study should be totally descriptive. And then they said that it could not deal with and not even mentioned the U.S. Therefore, since I am a bit curious, during the presentation of the report, I didn't mention them, but I, of course, included the conclusions of my study. But not long ago, the White House is doing now what I would have recommended to do. But due to the policy of this entity that has nothing to do with the government or with what the government is doing, there is a policy that is created that goes against its against the government's interest. So this is something interesting to analyze. This is an entity reporting to or to the interests of the government, but not of to the interest of the people of the U.S. Celia Lerman speaking. Thank you very much. We do not have enough time. We will continue with the debate later. There is a question from Damian Fossi. Good morning, Damian. He's from Caracas, Venezuela. It is interesting to note that emphasis is being put on FTAs such as the ACTA and the TPP, when in Latin America there are other treaties such as the Mercosur, ALBA, and other treatments like the CELAD. Why aren't they taken into account? Well, this is because we're at the ICANN meeting and we are taking into account the ones that are related to ICANN. But, of course, there are many treaties in Latin America, and this is a starting point, and this is a space to exchange other experiences as well. This is Celia speaking. Sorry, but we do not have time for further questions. This is Rodrigo de la Parra speaking. Thank you very much for your presentation. I think this is a very interesting topic for our space. And let's think about this. Perhaps we can continue our debate in Los Angeles. And we can, of course, speak about this later on. We have two other important sessions in this space sessions. We want to speak about two important processes. One is internet governance in our region. One is the LAC-IGF, as you know. It has been held in El Salvador. And the other one is the IGF in the Caribbean region. And here we have our friend Bernadette Luis. Bernadette, thank you for being here with us. I will ask her to let us know about the processes that they are carrying out and all the preparations for this IGF that will be held in the Caribbean region. Go ahead, please.
Technician has just turned his back. But while we're waiting for him to return, I just want to say the preceding discussion was so interesting, and it just opens up new things for us to think about and explore. So I was really very happy to hear the earlier presentations. And I think, of course, there's this need for us to collaborate across the Latin American and Caribbean region. As you heard, my name is Bernadette Lewis. I'm the Secretary General of the Caribbean Telecommunications Union. It is an intergovernmental organization. We have 20 member countries. It was established in 1989 by CARICOM, the Caribbean community, their heads of government, to be the policy advisor to help in the formulation of harmonized policies for the region. So primarily, our primary business was about harmonized policies. Then in 2003, we expanded the mandate of the Caribbean Telecommunications Union to deal with issues pertaining to internet governance. And then in 2004, recognizing that the governments really could not do the work alone, we expanded the membership of the Caribbean Telecommunications Union to include private sector organizations, civil society, non-CARICOM governments. And in so doing, we actually created a multi-stakeholder forum. And so we have, and all of our work since 2004 has been on a multi-stakeholder basis, and it has been very effective. Then in 2005, following the WISIS deliberations, we were asked by the Caribbean community to address issues of internet governance on behalf of the region. So our mandates are harmonized policy formulation, capacity development, harmonization of systems and processes across the region. We also try to represent the region at international fora, and we serve as an industry watch. We look at the technology and see how it's evolving and try to advise our governments accordingly. We have 20 member countries, as I said, and private sector, civil society, a number of other organizations all participate in the work of the CTU. Then, in 2005, we established the Caribbean Internet Governance Forum. It was a multi-stakeholder forum, and this was in response to the request from the Caribbean community. And we pulled together everybody we could think of. So it was really a very interesting, the first meeting, I recall the first meeting was in August 2005, and we had everybody who, because we really didn't know anything about internet governance, and this was the preliminary set of discussions. And we also set up an online internet governance forum. And coming out of the first, second, and third meetings of our Internet Governance Forum, we established a harmonized policy framework which would direct the work of in Internet governance going forward. And this work was facilitated by the Caribbean Telecommunications Union. And I should say that the CTU, the Caribbean Internet Governance Forum, was the first such regional forum in the world. And this year, we'll be convening our 10th Caribbean Internet Governance Forum from the 6th to the 8th of August in the Bahamas. And one of the first things that we recognized was that there was a tremendous lot to be learned, and there was a dearth of understanding of internet governance and the multifaceted nature. And we, part of the policy framework, identified that awareness building and education had to be a significant part of the work that we did. And Selena, you mentioned the need to educate your ministers of foreign affairs and your diplomats. And we immediately started reaching out to our ministers of government, and not just ICT ministers, but also to members of the judiciary, law enforcement, a much wider groups of stakeholders, because the whole issue of internet governance is it's cross-cutting, and you really need to reach out beyond your regular constituents and clients. So we had a number of ministerial fora over the course of the years from 2005 to 2014. We did technical workshops and policy workshops on internet governance. We held 16 IXP symposia and workshops in 14 countries across the region. And we conducted a lot of internet governance work, ICT work, through one of our significant capacity building and educating initiatives, the Caribbean ICT Roadshow. To date, that roadshow has been held in 18 countries, and we've had repeat visits to many of the countries, as you'd see. So this has been the awareness building. You need to do it. You need to reach out to diverse stakeholders. You need to deliver the message in language that is well understood in the context of what people do, what the stakeholders do. We have been collaborating with Latin America. In 2011, we held the Caribbean and Latin American Conference in Internet Governance, and that was two activities, the 7th Caribbean Internet Governance Forum, and of course, the 4th LAC IGF. Yes, and I see a lot of the faces who joined us in Trinidad and Tobago for that event. And then in 2014, we hosted the 6th edition of the South School on Internet Governance. And that was extremely well received. We had 134 participants from 22 countries in Latin America and the Caribbean. And of course, as we educated and raised awareness of not just internet governance issues, but many of the organizations which were charged with different aspects of governance, you would have seen the Caribbean participation increasing over the period of time. We've participated in the IGF, in the global IGF. We've run regional hubs. We participate in LACNIC and ARIN and ICANN and ISOC. We are raising awareness of the work of these organizations even as we participate in them. We've done a lot of innovation and entrepreneurship work, a number of workshops, because we recognize how fundamentally the world has changed and that many of the processes, many of the structures and frameworks of the last century have effectively been dismantled by the whole evolution of technology and so on. So we have been encouraging innovation and entrepreneurship. We support innovators and entrepreneurs. We create, through our Caribbean ICT Roadshow, a marketplace for bringing together the innovators and the people who need their services. Of course, we have sponsored and facilitated the establishment of the Caribbean Network Operators Group that is designed to train our engineers and people responsible for maintaining networks on very technical aspects of ICT. And we want to move them beyond just maintaining, but to experiment and go beyond and really maximize the power of the technology with which they're charged to maintain. Of course, we've done a number of publications. We do a lot of research and publications. We've done white papers on IXPs, IPv6 adoption. In collaboration with the OAS, we produced the cybersecurity framework for the Caribbean, because as we encourage our members to make use of ICTs effectively, although we're not a security agency, we have a responsibility to alert them as to the risks. So we have also been very much involved in the cybersecurity aspect of it. And I just want to point to the importance of strategic partnership, internet governance, ICT-based or ICT-enabled development is a collective responsibility. No single agency can do the job. And a lot, the majority of our work is executed through strategic partnerships. And these are just some of the partners that we routinely collaborate with. The work is too much for any single organization, and consequently, you have to collaborate. And we have made strategic partnerships a significant strategy for enabling us to fulfill our mandate. And you could see just some of our regular collaborators. And there's enough work, I guarantee. There's no reason to be fighting for turf. There's enough work for everybody. Trust me, there's. And you'd find as we go along, the work is just expanding. And some of the outcomes. So I've just given you a brief snapshot of all the activities we've been involved in from 2005 over the last 10 years. And consequently, we've seen a greater awareness and understanding of internet governance issues. We have, I think, four of our members participating in the GAC as a result of the outreach we've been doing. Of course, the enhanced technical expertise, when you first participate in some of these meetings, it's like if you're in a washing machine, you know, and it's very, very just things floating around. But as we encourage and support our stakeholders in participating, they are learning, and we are seeing a definite increase in the level of technical expertise. I've mentioned the increased participation in many ICT, global, regional, international activities. And one of the things that we're very happy about, we actually have internet exchange points in the Caribbean, and this is as a direct result of the work of the Caribbean Internet Governance Forum. all of the internet exchange points, without exception, have been established as a result of the work of the CTU and the Caribbean Internet Governance Forum and our strategic partners, I should add. And of course, we continue with the work, the support for our Caribbean innovators. We've seen some amazing young people coming forward and doing extremely well as a result of the exposure they have had through the Internet Governance Forum and, of course, the Caribbean ICT Roadshow. And our next steps would be to finalize the second issue of our Caribbean Internet Governance Policy Framework. The first issue focused on five strategic areas, that of logical infrastructure, physical infrastructure, content creation, awareness building, and research. And we've worked in all five of those areas. And the next issue, which will be finalized in August at the 10th Caribbean Internet Governance Forum. I know that a number of other areas have been put forward by the community, security and privacy, and a number of other areas will be identified. And because the community has contributed to the development of this policy framework, the CTU facilitates its implementation by bringing the necessary stakeholders together. Another thing that we are working on is building the value of an IXP. We don't just want our service providers to be just exchanging traffic. It's wonderful. Yes, there are pluses in that, but there's a lot more to be done. We have a program that we will be rolling out in August to mobilize local communities in increasing IPv6 adoption and DNSSEC as well. And we will be mobilizing communities, national communities. So far, we've been dealing on a regional basis, but we want to drill down further to our 20 member countries to get communities of internet users participating more in the global debate. Another area, new business models for the internet economy, very, very important. As I said, the world has changed, and all the steps you could eliminate 20 steps in setting up a business now, but you need that enabling environment. So we have been doing a lot of outreach, a lot of education on the new business models for the internet economy, especially since in the Caribbean you would find, well, 80% of the economy, the economy is driven mostly by small to medium-sized businesses. So you really have to focus on building their capacity to use the internet effectively and also encouraging ICT business and ICT based or businesses that make good use of the internet. Of course, we'll be doing some CCTLD strengthening. This is going to come up. We're working with ICANN on that. We have been doing a lot of research into the content creation initiatives, a compelling regional, compelling Caribbean content is something that we really need to pay attention to, and of course the support for innovators. And finally, some final thoughts. A lot of what we are doing has to do with changing mindsets, right? I think that is the challenge. And getting our, especially from our perspective, from our government's perspective, the irrevocable changes that have taken place in the world, and that if you do not respond appropriately to these changes, you are going to be left behind. And so it is about changing mindsets. And then we really have to enlist diverse stakeholders. You might think diversity, it is wonderful, and I could speak in that having diverse views, it helps. It really helps in coming up with better solutions. And what we are doing here, as I said before, is a collective responsibility. We have to do the research. You cannot avoid it. Make sure you have your facts. Make sure you have the evidence for your policies. Otherwise, things fall apart. Educate the stakeholders. Educate. From the governments right down to the man on the street. This, you need to do it if people are going to be act in meaningful ways and really derive the benefits of all that is happening. and make realistic plans. When we started out, we recognized that there are things we were really just not equipped or, you know, we didn't have the capacity to address. So those are the things we set aside while we focused on the things that we could, where we could have a meaningful difference as we built capacity in other areas. And finally, execute. Making plans, talking, all wonderful, but it's useless and a waste of time if you do not act, if you do not execute. And the longest journey, it starts with a first step. And execution is something that I think the Caribbean Internet Governance Forum has demonstrated that so much could be done with so little. If you think things through properly, you can have a significant impact. And I think that what we've accomplished over the last 10 years, I think it speaks for itself. There's much you can do with very little. Just think it through and act thereon. And with that, that brings me to the brief status of where we are with our Caribbean Internet Governance Forum. I thank you all.
Bernadette, muchísimas gracias.
Andres is speaking. Rodrigo speaking. Thank you, Bernadette. Very interesting presentation explaining what is happening in the Caribbean. It has been quite inspiring, your last comments. I couldn't agree more. But let's make the questions for the end, and I will give the floor to Fatima, who will tell us about the experience of the LAC-IGF, and then we will exchange the questions with both of them. Fatima speaking. Thank you, Rodrigo. Thank you for the invitation. Let me tell you what LAC-IGF is about. Many of you know what it is. This is the Latin American Caribbean Internet Government Forum, which is in preparation for the global IGF. This year will be held in San Salvador in July 2016-17 in the Real Intercontinental Hotel. And the local hosts this year are Conexión El Salvador. I've seen the people from Conexión over there. So let me tell you what the process is about of LAC-IGF in our region. This event was held for the first time in 2008 in Montevideo. The three local organizers were LACNIC, the Internet, NUPF, the Association for Progressive Communications, and from the original composition in 2008, it has evolved to the committee program or responsible for its organization. And in 2014, this year, we have a multi-stakeholder program committee with two representatives from each stakeholder, among them ICANN and LACTD from the technical community, CETE from COMLAC from the private sector, governments such as Argentina and Brazil that were already parties this year, joined by Uruguay and Mexico. And as civil society organizations, we have APC, Higher Density Argentina, whom I'm a member of, together with ATC, the Association for Civil Rights, and the Chilean ODG, also members of the committee. And since 2012, LACNIC is the secretariat of LAC-IGF. This is an event for and by the community. Those of us in the program committee, we represent all sectors, and anyone interested in making any contribution, comment, could approach any of us and let us know about your concerns, contributions, improvements, anything you want to give us. The peculiar characteristics of our regional IGF is that all parties of the event, all parts of the event were developed in conjunction with the community, such as the agenda, which was developed in collaboration. And this year, we at the program committee faced a challenge of the scenario change after Net Mundial and visiting topics that are typical of our region and those of the global IGF agenda. So in the next few days, we will see the final agenda published. One of the objectives we have set for ourselves from this event is that we should have completed the LAC IGF with our own regional agenda and topics of our interest for our agenda. I'm being told that it's already published in Spanish, the agenda. So on the website of LAC IGF, you will find it. You can also register online from the website. And this year, we have also added two additional activities. One of them is a pre-webinar of LAC IGF in collaboration with the members of the capacity building group of the global IGF. MAG. In our region, we will have the pre-IGF on July 7 at 15 UTC. We will be disclosing this. You will be invited. And those of you who've never attended an LAC IGF meeting, you will have the chance to get information about it, how to participate, what expectations we and you have, what expectations the participants have from the meeting, how you can make contributions. And let me tell you that this has been mainly a space of debate for all of us as stakeholders to meet. After Net Mundial, one of the requests was to strengthen the IGF and consequently the LAC IGF. So the community itself is asking from it to become something more than a debate space. So we have this challenge ahead of us as well. Another characteristic of our IGF is that July 16, there will be an orientation, a guidance meeting to supplement the online webinar. You will be invited to participate. Mostly those of you who've never attended this meeting, but those of you who have already been there, you are also invited to come, attend, and tell your experience to those who are doing this for the first time this year. You will know who are the fellows that have been given the grant to participate. And let me make a call for solidarity here. We've been fortunate to get ICANN's support, LAC TLD, LACNIC, Google, Telefonica, among other sponsors who are providing their contribution. This allows us to take more people to the meeting. So any of you who have spare money and want to help the LAC IGF, please approach us, because anything you can give us means another fellow attending the meeting. So I have much more to tell you, but I think it's enough for the time being. Thank you very much. Rodrigo speaking. Thank you, Fatima. We are almost at the end of the time allotted to us, but we have a comment from Gonzalo. Gonzalo Navarro, board member speaking. I'm from Chile. I was also part of the negotiation with the USFTD. Bernadette, I have a question for you, very specific. Fatima, thank you very much for your presentation. There are many questions to be made. I'm certain we will have the chance to continue discussing these issues in Los Angeles. You said that specific measures is something very important that has been one of the focus you had, the Caribbean IGF. I'm still thinking about how you have built awareness in the Caribbean region on internet governance. and the IGF issues. I'd like to know which specific measures you developed and if you were able to identify any ways to improve awareness on these issues, and how are you thinking ahead? What are your projections for the future? Thank you in advance.
We have a number of different mechanisms for building awareness. The first is the Caribbean ICT Roadshow, which attempts to reach the widest possible cross-section of Caribbean citizens in a given country. There are no two roadshows the same. It is not a cookie-cutter exercise. Before we go out, we visit the country, we understand the environment, where they are in terms of the liberalization, what is the penetration. We do due diligence on that environment, and then we craft a program to target the areas that have been identified by the community. And that is very important. One of the things we learned very early when we do a Caribbean ICT roadshow was that the ICT practitioners were coming out. That's not who we need to reach. We need to reach other stakeholders. So we actually started going out into communities and meeting different stakeholders. We've been to farm, the agricultural department. We've had sessions for law enforcement, so that the people who are not normally exposed have some understanding. And we found in most cases, it is really a case of like switching on a light and pointing people in the right direction so that they could move on their own thereafter. So as I said, so it's diverse audiences. No two roadshows are the same. Different countries are at different places. And we work with the local community to identify the types of training and exposure that are that's necessary. The other thing is that very little gets done unless your ministers understand. So our ministerial focus outreaches explain the technology in language that is appropriate for ministers. We talk about, yes, we talk a little bit about the bits and the bytes, but we talk about the implications for policy, the implications for legislation, for regulations, the potential impact of the technology on national development. So we target the audiences with a different message, one that they can receive in the context of what they do, and that has proven to be very, very effective.
Bernadette, muchas gracias y muchas gracias a todos. Tenemos que
Rodrigo speaking. Thank you, Bernadette, and thank you all of you, because we have to resume the session. We have to stop the session. Thank you all.